Mini episode 1816 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1816. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with you with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, Ben Chu. We normally refer to him in his role as FDH Hoops Analyst, but we've also had a little mini series going on here over the course of the show with Ben and I being real nerds for the streaming business and the way that that's going, the economics of it, how it is evolving, because it is going to be one of the dominant things, really, in the first half of the 21st century as far as how we consume media. We've seen that over the course of the last decade. It continues to evolve. And Ben hit me up in the last week and said, hey, look, there's been a lot of developments with this going on here. Time to check back in. Time to take a look and see what's unfolding. So that's what we're doing here today for 1816 is taking an updated look at the streaming business, the major companies in it, some of the moves that they're making. And Ben, thanks for the idea and for being on with me, my friend.
Oh, no problem, Rick. Always excited to be back on.
Yeah. It's always great to do this. And, you know, since it was your idea, I'll let you lead with it. I got a bunch of notes right here on what I'm thinking. But where do you want to start?
Actually, do you want to do like a – I think the most interesting thing that we want to probably just lead off with, do we want to talk about David Zaslav's comments on
– Oh, yeah. Yeah.
On the current NBA – on the the sports package that they currently have. I know that he was, I believe, you can double check this, or we can check this in post at some point too, where he was at a conference, I believe it was in LA, where he was asked regarding Turner and Max essentially turning down the NBA deal to pursue other avenues. And at this point, I mean, it's not surprising David Zaslav has always had a very distinct opinion on cost cutting and saving and determining what they need. And again, you know, the one thing we always will note about professional sports is that we've seen this every in all the decades, from the 80s when the NBA left from CBS, in the 90s when baseball was moving around to different platforms, different networks, and the NFL too when the Fox package came in. So right now it feels a little bit like Zaslav is using the additional capital to pick off some of these other smaller things like the Unrivaled League, the Women's 3-on-3 League, also like the French Open, they paid a fair amount of money, also college basketball, a little bit of college football too, including the playoff games that they started this year.
And the Big 12 for college football.
Very interesting. One of the comments I did think that he did say during the event, which I will paraphrase, but essentially he was saying that sports fans, that essentially Turner and HBO is not really in the business of gaining sports rights. It's gaining content. So that's more focused in on creating these sort of things. And we saw as part of the NBA deal, they also were allowed to create documentaries. I know HBO is showing the Boston Celtics 8-part documentary series, and then there's also other things planned in the future queue. So it's very interesting. I mean, it's also sort of a stance that Netflix took before they paid for the NFL Christmas Day games, that that they would rather have documentaries than actual full live sports.
Yeah, documentaries, that's always the fallback that everybody cites before they get any kind of big package, and then they're like, well, that's what we wanted all along. And yeah, so Zaslav, and so particularly in the context of the show today, Max, that's a thing where getting the rights, because just about everything that's going to be on the linear networks is also going to be on Max in some form or fashion. So in terms of that, yeah, I mean, Big 12 football and basketball, they picked up some of that from ESPN. And so, and as you said, some of these other properties, but it's a thing where essentially, they're sort of like a glorified version. They're like a slightly higher up version of what the CW is, because the CW is getting essentially like second tier and sometimes third tier entities in different sports, whether it be racing, whether it be golf, whether it be the number three WWE property, NXT. That's what they're doing. And tell me that Max isn't doing something that's very, very similar to that. Albeit, again, they have Major League Baseball, they have the NHL, and that's where, and that includes playoff rights in both of them, including the Stanley Cup final every other year for the NHL. So it's a better version of what CW is doing. It's an elevated version of it. But again, we've talked about this before. MLB, NHL, as much as it pains me personally, sports that have been sort of siloed here, especially in comparison to the NBA, college football, and the NFL. They do have two college football playoff games, but those are always going to be the ones going up against the NFL on that Saturday afternoon. They're always going to be the two weakest matchups because ESPN's got their hand right there into the scheduling. So they're going to reserve unto themselves the Friday night and the Saturday night games to be the best ones. So it really is a deal where, again, everything with Max, I mean, it is kind of an evolving thing as we go along too, because what they also announced, more or less parallel to what Zaslav was saying, no more sports tier. But what they're going to do, and for everybody like myself that's got the old, BR Sports, I've got like the basic plan with ads. They're taking BR Sports and CNN Max off of that, and it's going to go to the standard tier. So you have to pay an extra $7 a month to watch that. And like, that is one of the better ways to watch it, the AEW properties. I kind of prefer watching it on there because it's easier to do on demand than it is on TV with the TNT and the TBS broadcasts. But there's an incoherence to what they're doing in that sense, like you said, because he's acting like they're still playing at the highest levels, and they're not. They've never really made, and this predates him, they've never really made serious inroads towards getting an NFL package ever since they lost the half of season of Sunday Night Football back in the late 90s, back before it really was Sunday Night Football as we know it today. They're never really in the mix for that. They lost the NBA largely because of his game playing and how inept it turned out to be in the end. So, yeah, I mean, he's talking a big game, but basically where they're at, yeah, you're absolutely right, Ben. It doesn't match up with the reality on the ground.
Right, and I think the real question moving forward, too, is like, in terms of saving money, it's a great move. And it's in terms of being able to scale the Max platform. And we saw like it's been exponentially growing. It's being that their last quarterly earnings report, it went up by 8%.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like that they have an opportunity to really brand Max a little bit better. Because remember, too, the biggest question, it wasn't regarding the content that was on the platform. The biggest question of what was it? Because the entities are just so varied, from Turner to TCM to, you know, a lot of stuff for Cartoon Network. So it's just a lot of different platforms, and trying to, we all know too, especially with how the economy is looking currently right now, there's going to be some belt tightening at some point by a lot of middle American families. And the question ultimately too is, you're going to start to see a lot more, I think, cord cutting in the near future, just because of the amount of money that cable costs at this time. And now with the proliferation of sports across many of these platforms now, it's not going to be super complicated to find games. Because honestly, the only reason why a lot of people have a cable package still is for sports.
Yeah.
And news, essentially. Those are the only two things that you can do. But I feel like, and we've seen this before, where you can get by pretty decently with only having a couple streaming services and getting enough live sports at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what they're counting on people doing is them being a part of it. Because again, the fact that they bundle up BR Sports and CNN Max together, that's that whole thing you're talking about people getting their sports and their quote unquote news in there. And so ultimately, yeah, I mean, it's an incoherence basically kind of at this point as far as where Max is. And as you pointed out to me off air, it's easy to talk a big game right now. You still got the NBA. You're still going to be riding this out through the conference finals. I forget which conference finals they have this year, but, you know, that'll be the ultimate farewell once it gets to the end of May. And then you have to prepare for life after that. And then you're looking at some weird kind of things in the aftermath of that, of like somehow or another, I think Turner Sports is still going to operate NBA's TV channel. They're still going to be producing inside the NBA, but like subleasing it to ESPN. I mean, I have no idea what that's going to look like. I mean, they're still going to be on the same set and it's going to have the look and the feel, but it's like, it's going to make me laugh if I see like a TNT logo on there somewhere because they don't have anything more to do with it. I don't know if I haven't heard that it's going to be like a simulcast, but I don't know why you would simulcast the pregame for something and then not the actual game itself.
Right.
So that's just a,
it's going to be really interesting. We still do not know, at least for inside the NBA, what that plan dictates at this period.
That's right. Yeah.
But it's looking, I would think, more very similarly to like a scenario of like doing sort of like these live podcasts essentially these days, where essentially it won't be every game day. It won't be every pregame show. It'll be like, they will be the post show essentially for most of these events.
Yeah.
They'll relegate to the NBA. And then it would not shock me too, that they use them a lot during the playoff runs during the summer league as well. So there's opportunities there to make some legitimate inroads and that respect. So
yeah, and so, and that'll be something vis-a-vis the streaming business, that'll be something that'll be showing up with ESPN Plus, and then potentially further integration with Disney Plus as well, since they're starting to get a little bit more into televising some of these different events as well, and integrating some of the ESPN programming onto there. One of the other areas, I guess, since we've been talking about things involving the NBA, just to make it sort of a smooth segue, I'll mention Amazon Prime. One of the big developments there is that they indicated that they are going to be testing AI-added dubbing for TV and movie shows that they have on there. So that's going to be something where, we have seen at this point in time that AI still makes errors in transcription and in some of the research and everything like that. So one would hope that it's vetted well enough, because I'm sure social media will be full of examples of where they got something hilariously wrong if that ends up being the case. But they're the first ones that I know of to dip their toe in the water of doing that. And that's one of those things that, again, much like the streaming business itself, the way that it's eventually probably going to take over most of TV and entertainment at some point, the AI stuff, it will probably become standard at some point that everyone's doing it, but they're going to be the first ones, and it's going to be starting sometime soon, apparently.
Yeah, and I mean, right now, Amazon has a pretty significant part of the NBA package at this period. So,
okay.
I mean, going into it, like, there's going to be regular season, playoffs, summer league, pretty much a lot of the stuff that is being currently shown on ESPN and NBA TV in the offseason will be on Amazon Prime. And okay. We've seen the sort of mini shift that Amazon Prime Video has been doing very recently. I've noticed they've been starting to pull back a little bit on their original content timeline and focusing more on bringing, very similar to what Netflix has been doing for the last 2 years, which is focusing on established properties and acquiring stuff like, obviously, MGM. You also have, I've never read anywhere else, but somewhat a handshake deal with CBS and Paramount, where they've shared a lot of content in recent months. So it feels like they're trying to build something very similar to Netflix, but then also defining themselves by live content, because as you can tell, they have their own live channels, very similar to Pluto TV. They also have plenty of sports coverage, you know, from pickleball to tennis to Overtime Elite. And that's not even counting the Thursday night NFL package and then now the NBA package, which is going to take up a significant part of their schedule. And then with the crossovers and the abilities to sort of make more advertising dollars off of that market as well, because despite, I think, what people think outside of like European football fans, I think NBA fans are among some of the most willing to spend money fans. I mean, you can also throw the NFL in there too, but it feels like that it's just a way to keep everyone into the ecosystem. And I feel like that's the thing that Zaslav and Max currently don't have, because they're more of a cable entity. They're not really a company in that respect. Like Amazon can afford to it because the cash is overflowing there. And at some point too, we also have to logistically consider that they are really wanting people to stay in the Prime ecosystem and not leave it.
They do. Yeah. And that's where, and again, and I always kind of tend to lump in, at least from the type of business that they are, Amazon Prime, Netflix, Apple TV Plus, because they're not tied to any of the networks. They're not tied to any of these large entities out there that are generating a lot of these properties that you can then simulcast or rebroadcast on your streaming service. They've got to always go out and get everything, and they've got to be able to hustle for it, and in many cases outbid the entities that have networks attached to them for those properties. So I've been surprised for years now at how resilient they've been, especially Netflix, albeit Netflix, and this is another one that we're looking at here from recent news, a big sell-off. And I know that a lot of tech companies have been going through some sell-off issues here recently, but in the case of Netflix, it did seem to be somewhat surprising. I think at one point they were down better than 10%. So that is something that, again, going forward is going to be something to keep an eye on. I would not expect that, you know, what I know about, the stock properties of these things could fit comfortably into a thimble. But I would not think that it would be going down too much further than it is. But you never know, Ben.
Right. And I think the real question, too, is some of these bundle, like we've talked about the cable bundle before in the 90s and the early 2000s. Now we're in the streaming bundle timeline. And I think the question a lot of people are going to start to ask Netflix is, since they've been slowly declining how many original pieces of content that they're producing or showing, is this service still worth me paying for it at some point?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously we saw a lot with them doing the NFL. We saw them acquire the WWE rights as well. And it's for them, it's very interesting. They were initially like the spunky, you know, underdog with the House of Cards series that essentially took over the world. And then we kind of gave the whole streaming narrative as a successful narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like, too, the one thing that Netflix does have in its queue is it's a global brand. Like Disney Plus is global, Max is global too, but it's not on the scale of Netflix. There are countries that still do not have Disney Plus, you know.
Right.
Push through, same thing with Max, same thing with Peacock, same with, there's a lot of different entities. But Netflix, the one thing about their business, it's still a very singular business. And you can see now that they're moving into more, entertainment that allows people to be more fully immersed in it. They do a lot of great work on social media. On top of that, they still have some of the tentpole shows on TV right now. You know, upcoming season of Black Mirror is going to be big for them. They also have, consistently, they have the final season of You with Penn Badgley. That show was very popular as well. And the question for them, if we look forward for them, is there used to be a timeline where you would point to Netflix and say, okay, they have 5 of the top 10 shows on TV, right? In terms of cable or streaming or however you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're going through this thing very similar to what I see like some of these streaming services go through. Like, they're cutting back their original content. So there's a lot less hits coming out. So because of that, the question is for Netflix is like, what are their tentpole shows going to be moving forward? Because at this point, there's only a handful of shows at this point that still exist on their platform that has not ended or have not moved on yet. So at this point, they have the money. They have the partnerships too with, a bunch of the notable directors too, like Del Toro, Ava DuVernay. You know, they got a fair amount of people. You know, Shonda Rhimes obviously is also in the conversation there too. So they have a lot of good entities. They have a lot of good shows. But the question ultimately is going to turn into is how many of these good shows are still going to be existing in the future for them? And will people be able to justify spending money on Netflix?
Yeah, it's a good question. And let's put Sandler in the bunch too. Going to have Happy Gilmore 2 this summer. I will make sure that I'm definitely able to check that out. Whether or not my present gift card extends to that point in time or another, I will make sure that I'm able to see that because we've all waited decades for it. So, yeah, I mean, Netflix has really hung in there and been resilient. And my guess is that this is just sort of a hiccup here as far as what's happened with their stock recently. But when you're looking at what some of the larger entities in the business are doing. And from a business perspective, few, if any, entities out there are bigger than Google. Now, they haven't always, that hasn't always trickled down to YouTube and YouTube Premium necessarily being at the level of some of the ones that we've talked about here in terms of growth. But Google continues to be committed as a business strategy, at least medium to long term, into growing it. And the news with, and I think you took note of this also this week, that the Premium Lite service has been rolled out for YouTube Premium. So it's something that, again, makes it somewhere between, you know, the free model and what people have been paying for previously. And it's something that, based on the initial reviews of it that I've seen, might indicate a potential for growth out there and a chance to get people to buy something at a little bit lower level, even if they're ready, not ready to commit to the premium one per se.
Right. And I think it's going to be very interesting, too, just in terms of video streaming and just how that platform is. We all tend to forget that right now YouTube is the most popular platform for video content.
Mm-hmm.
Bigger than Netflix, bigger than Disney Plus, bigger than all these other entities. And as you can guess, we've all seen the shift that they've done over the last year of adding more ads, adding more unskippable ads. And you're seeing a lot of the ecosystem now of people joining YouTube Premium for their music, also for their music package as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be very interesting because I do feel like for them, that's part of the big deal at the end of the day. They need, really need to bring and keep people around on the site, because at some point you also have to ask the question for YouTube, like, it's one of the biggest entities, but people will, if they have to sit through 3 minutes of ads, will they do that?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a legitimate question. We've seen it at points where I'll use the example of sports, where an NBA highlight that's 9 minutes long will have 2 minutes and 45 seconds worth of ads.
Mm-hmm.
So most people who can afford it will pay not to have it.
Sure.
And then also with all the individual things, and, you know, they're working also too. Podcasts are big there too, after Spotify took over the world with that. They're right there. They're number two right now
mm-hmm.
in popularity. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they play everything moving forward. Because at that time, they did experiment with YouTube Red. That didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
But they are still the biggest video platform on Earth. And it's going to be really interesting to see, like, for people who are annoyed by advertising, paying $9.99 American usually is not that big of an ask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you also still get all the, you know, all the other things as part of it. You know, you get picked, you get, you know, pop out video and the ability to rewind and create certain points and mix and match things as well. So they're obviously a player. We don't talk about them as much, mainly because we're mainly more focused in on the streaming shows and the movies, but YouTube mm-hmm. is still YouTube. It is the biggest video platform, you know, it on Earth right now. Like, I don't think there's a world where YouTube is not a significant player.
Right. And this is one of these things, too, where I was reading about another feature that it's going to have here. And this sort of surprised me, although I did see that it's on a couple of other services already. And as much as I follow these things, I'm not exactly Kenny cutting edge on every last feature that's out there. But this notion of being able to share and watch remotely, they're going to have that on there. So, like, if you want to watch a movie that's exclusive to YouTube, or I suppose an episode of a TV show. I don't think they have too many instances of that, but certainly they have movies that, or let's say they're not necessarily exclusive to YouTube, but they got the rights to it. And you want to watch it with some friends remotely, you know, presumably, I guess there's like a chat feature there for that, but it's something that will universalize the process. And only one person needs to have, now, I guess they would be the host for it. Only one person out of the group needs to have this premium light in order to be able to make it work. But you'll be able to watch this, and then when you stop it, it'll stop on everybody's screen that's watching remotely. So again, this was a kind of, you know, a novelty for me to come across this. And I was like, well, that would be kind of a cool feature. And that's something that you could see people doing. I mean, if they have friends that are sort of spread out and they might like to do some activities together, you know, this is somewhere between, I guess, a virtual and a non-virtual gathering with your friends if they're spread out across the country or across the world. So it was definitely an interesting feature for me to read about.
Yeah, and also, I know YouTube, too, has been also experimenting with their influencers.
Okay.
In terms of doing sports, and Oscar coverage is also being discussed as well, too, and Grammy coverage.
Okay.
So it's a very interesting scenario for YouTube right now, because obviously they're not in the same competition level as the other streaming video services, but they still are one of the biggest players. And with just the younger generation, that they grew up on the thing. Like, we all grew up on YouTube, but there are there's literally generations right now that this is their only video service, very similar to TikTok. Like, this is the thing that they do for most of their day.
Yeah. There's a lot of, you know, in particular Zoomers out there, you know, that again, this is the main thing that they grew up with and have hung on to all these years. So that is a substantial one. Certainly one of the earlier streamers in the business here, Hulu, back to the mid to late 2000s. They had a sort of a milestone this past week or so. Not a great one in the sense of the first time that they were going to be covering the Oscars live. And unfortunately for them, there was much glitching on the platform. And sometimes, you know, as some of these streamers are getting more into the live events here, you know, you saw the difficulty that Netflix had with the Mike Tyson fight several months ago. Now, everything was pretty much tightened up for the NFL Christmas games. Those went off okay. And for Hulu, it's a little bit surprising because they've covered live events previously. I think they've had some music festivals and things like that. Maybe the Oscars was just a much bigger stage than they were used to having. But then again, you probably figure most people are watching it on linear TV anyways. If you're into the Oscars, you're probably watching it on TV, I would think so. I would think off the top of my head that the size of the audience wouldn't be anything that would have caused something like that. But something caused those issues, and it was at a very inopportune time. And again, the first time that Hulu is joining in the live coverage of it, it didn't go the way that they wanted.
No, I mean, I think knocking off the final 15 minutes of the Oscars is probably not what you want to do.
Yeah.
You know, these are things that we're going to talk about, like, with more of these entities pushing into live streaming and having these issues. Like, we all saw the incidents where the two most notable instances in recent memory that streamers having issues. Obviously, Netflix had the Love is Blind reunion that did not happen. That had to be recorded and shown later. And then there was also YouTube TV when they had streaming issues for one of the NBA playoff games that no one could view physically. So streamers are going to have live content and live sports and live entertainment is going to become bigger for all these streamers now.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going to be the thing that keeps a lot of people either on their site or off their stuff, either with them or against them or off them, essentially. So it's going to be really intriguing to see how live streaming capabilities are impacted. And we've discussed this too there when we saw the NFL Christmas games. There were individuals who had great streams of it and then people who had bad streams of it.
Mm-hmm.
You had also people complain that they were stuck in a queue and couldn't see anything for a little bit. So it was just, it's going to be stuff we're going to have to consider. And especially with all the platforms now having some form of live sports on.
Right.
It's going to be buffering and video quality are going to be some of the biggest things that we're going to have to keep an eye on, because that technology is going to be just getting more and more and more, especially with the bifurcation of a lot of the sports rights coming up.
Absolutely. And that's where, again, it really becomes a matter of, you know, because the streaming is pushing forward and sort of becoming predominant in the medium to especially long term at the expense of the existing networks, everything eventually is going to be on there in some form or fashion. And in a sense, it's kind of surprising that it took until 2025 for the Oscars to be a live broadcast on Hulu. I was a little bit surprised on reflection that it kind of took them this long to do this. Maybe they had some trepidation about this in past years. If so, the trepidation was warranted because the amount of traffic that they ended up getting. And I guess, too, that probably goes to, we said before, about the number of countries that some of these streamers are in. I know that Hulu is certainly not worldwide, but it's also not limited to the United States. So if you had potentially any global traffic that was impacting on that, perhaps that might have been an issue. That was one of the big things, I think, that tripped up the Tyson fight, the Tyson-Paul fight back in November, I think, was the international traffic. And that's what people were saying at the time. It's probably not going to impact the Christmas Day NFL broadcasts because, you know, that's where, you know, it's not, you know, nearly the same, you know, degree on that, because I don't know that the NFL ones were necessarily, if there was worldwide rights to that. So it was a smaller audience in that sense. Or even if there was, the NFL doesn't have as big of a following overseas as, say, Mike Tyson. So I don't remember what the specifics were, but one way or another, the broadcast was expected to be on a more limited basis in terms of the audience than the Tyson fight, and indeed it was. And anybody that had buffering for the Christmas Day thing here, I think, again, probably none of the complaints were coming from folks who had the buffering get stuck on Ms. K with her Christmas Day dress there. I don't think anybody was complaining about that.
I mean, the big thing that we're especially going to be monitoring, especially for Netflix moving forward, is they're going to get into more live sports rights at some point. It's bound to happen.
Yeah.
Especially with the NFL, we know they're, I might be mistaken, but they have an opt out. I believe it's next year, or is it 2020? I don't remember, but there's
29, I think. Yeah. 29. I think it's 29.
There is an option for them to opt out and potentially sell off a rights package to Netflix, hypothetically, which you would think that's why they partially did this deal to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be going to Prime too. Like Apple could get in the mix too, just because that, like, we're seeing the major complaint that seems to be the streaming world these days is there's just so many streaming services I need, and it's just going to continue to get more because different entities are going to pay different amounts of money to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's going to continue to be the case. And then Netflix, I was talking a minute ago about global rights to things here. One of the things this past week that materialized was there was a video that popped up from good old Triple H himself, head of creative for WWE, making a big announcement that Netflix was the Raw Netflix, rather. And I think all, because Netflix internationally carries all the WWE programming. It's just in the United States where it's split up between networks, that it's all coming to India April 1st because some of these existing deals overseas had to expire first. And that was a big enough deal to warrant a video from the big guy crowing about it, that we're coming to India. And of course, India is a gigantic market. But that just goes to show you, too, that as you move into these bigger markets overseas, that that's a part of this. Typically, that's more of a thing where if we're talking about international, the biggest leagues in soccer or anything like that, that's generally a bigger deal there. But as American sports leagues and sports adjacent properties like WWE are gaining a foothold overseas on entities like Netflix, that's becoming something as well here to keep an eye on.
Right. And the next biggest test for Netflix will be the Women's World Cup.
Yes.
Deal too, and that's going to be very interesting to see how they deal with buffering issues at that point.
Yes, yes. That's going to be a huge one because you are going to have the audience all over the globe that is going to be putting the infrastructure to the test. So there are going to be issues with that. And again, worth keeping an eye on going forward. With Netflix, again, it's a thing where you don't have the backup of, like with Hulu, I mean, it's a disaster if the Oscars are buffering. Let's not, you know, sugarcoat that any other way. But in most instances, at least domestically, the folks that if they have it buffering, presumably they're close enough to a TV to where they can just, you know, queue it up on ABC. And so with many of these different events here, too, unless it's a Peacock exclusive football game for college or pro, and there are a handful, but unless it's one of those, starts buffering, okay, let's just go fire up NBC or the USA Network or whatever's carrying that. But for Netflix, they have no backup when these things go poorly. There is no, you know, terrestrial channel, as it were, that's carrying this as well. It's all or nothing on what the streaming is able to withhold. Or withstand, right, I should say.
It's going to be very interesting to see because, remember, it was only about 2 years ago where Ted Sarandos said we're not really going to go into sports outside mm-hmm. of the basic documentary format. Now they have one of the biggest entities around the world in terms of, well, in sports entertainment of the WWE.
Yeah.
And now you have NFL Christmas Day. You're going to have the Women's World Cup coming up soon. And then there's going to be even more rights bought, because I feel like once they took the genie out of the bottle, like, you have to continuously provide value, provide worth for subscribers, because a lot of times when the economy isn't great or it's not going great around the world in terms of how the global economy is working too, you're going to see people cut subscriptions and try and figure out what's best for them over time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the great clip and saves over the history of this program has been, as I've said before, where I was wrong in a prediction, because I had predicted that certainly by the time of, I think, 2022, when the NFL rights were up, that you would see, if not Google buying a big package for YouTube, then potentially Apple TV making a bump in there, Amazon Prime with not just the Thursday night package, but one of the main Sunday ones. I'd been predicting that that was going to happen. And then where I got it wrong was I didn't realize that, again, this is a matter of sort of existential survival for the networks and, by extension, the local affiliates, that they have this. They're able to billboard their programming for the entire week. It's the one thing, you know, in a very bifurcated day and age in terms of viewing options, when you can count on people on Sunday afternoons to be able to tune in for these things here. So that's going to be, when that comes up again, because these windows almost always come up when it's at the NFL's advantage. So if the NFL has the option to opt out in 2029, as I think I remember is the case, then they're certainly going to. And it becomes a matter, and we've talked about this also over the course of time, of TV shrinkflation, of that, you know, like ESPN on the new deal with the NBA, they're getting less, they're paying more. That's the way that everything keeps working here. That, again, Netflix is talking about, we'd love to get one of the main Sunday packages. Now, if that's the case, you're doing away with the whole AFC-NFC distinction here, because presumably Amazon's getting some games for Sunday afternoon. How does that work? Do they have more than one game at the same time that the whole country's able to see if it's not on affiliates here? So, and would the networks and their affiliates be willing to take something like that, like, okay, but you're going to have more competition for eyeballs and less games on your network? That's the kind of shrinkflation that I think I have a really hard time seeing happen. But again, if I'm right, and it's a matter of existential survival for the networks and for the affiliates that they have this, how much are they willing to swallow before they let go of it altogether? And I think we're approaching that point, because the streamers are getting more confident and more wanting to claw in for bigger things here. This is the first time we've really heard anybody, I think, talk as ambitious as Netflix was about getting some of the main Sunday action. So that's something to really keep an eye on in the course of the next couple of years here, is how much Fox and CBS are willing to split on what the packages are, giving up games, giving up eyeballs, because the ratings for your own games are going to be lower, because a lot of times with blackouts on opposing networks and everything like that, sometimes you only have one game going on at a time. It'll always be at least two games going on at a time if somebody can flip on Netflix and watch a game. So that's going to be just hugely, hugely consequential in the next couple of years.
Right. And we're also looking at the elephant in the room, too, that Fox is coming out with their own streaming service. Same thing with ESPN, too, off the top, after mm-hmm. they've given up a portion of the baseball deal.
Right.
So it's going to be, there's still a lot of things at play right now. And there's going to be a lot of rights for a lot of these leagues coming up. Like the NBA just passed theirs on to Amazon, essentially, after moving it from Max.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be very interesting, because I feel like all these streaming services need two things, which are tentpole shows, the stuff like The White Lotus, stuff like Bridgerton, stuff like Severance. You need those tentpole shows, but I feel like to survive in the streaming world, you need sports packages as well. You need live sports. It doesn't exist. You cannot exist in a streaming service unless it's very, very niche without a live sports deal of some form.
Yes. And the problem for the networks is, and again, and like I said, I was incorrect, I think, going as far back as maybe the mid-2010s when I was first saying on the show, oh, it's definitely going to happen. Because I was just looking at the pocketbooks here, the pocketbooks of Google and Apple and a lot of the other entities out there, Amazon as well, everything that Bezos has got at his disposal. I really would have thought that they would have clawed in for something bigger at this point in time here. And they, at this point, they haven't been at the same point that the networks have been at. The networks are a point, because you always hear this, they're like, oh, it's a loss leader. But it has to be. And that's kind of like from where I first was of like, this is inevitable, and it's inevitable by the early 2020s at the latest, and where I was wrong is that it's a loss leader for them because it has to be, because I think it's a matter of survival. And it's not a matter of survival to the bigger pocketed entities out there. But like you said, if you want to continue to grow, if you want to continue to be relevant, Apple TV Plus, and again, they've got some great shows on there. You and I are both really hooked on Severance, and they've had some other excellent shows on over a period of time, The Morning Show and some of these other ones here too. But if you really want to matter, then you got to have bigger things here than one Friday night MLB game a week and the MLS package, because the MLS, you know, even with Messi down in Miami here, you've had, that was supposed to be a big step up for the sport, but it's what everybody talks about when Howard Stern went to Sirius XM was that, like, nobody was able to hear him as much at that point relative to where he was. He wasn't water cooler talk anymore once he went there and got the payday. It's kind of the same thing with MLS, that they've had to farm out some games to, I think, Fox, and I think FS1, I think, has gotten some of the spillover games from Apple. But that's a thing where, again, they wouldn't have to do that, nor would they be incentivized to do that in any way if those were NFL games or NBA games. The NBA, the ship sailed on that one. The NFL, wait a couple of years. And, I think the streamers are coming in a big way. I'm going to keep saying this, and at some point in time, I'm going to be right. I might be old and gray at that point in time, but I'm going to be right at some point, Ben.
I feel like it's just an inevitability that a streaming service will have a package deal.
A big one, right?
Whether it's games or a week, or if it's just very similar to an expanded Amazon coverage, essentially. I think it's just a done deal. Everyone, I know the cable, and again, we also have to note this too, cable companies and cable systems aren't making a lot of money right now.
Right.
And at some point, you're going to have to wonder how much pain will they continue to inflict on themselves.
It's a good question.
If all these entities really don't matter after a while.
Yeah, that is true. And so we'll see how that goes. There was the matter of, and I think this might have been you that texted this to me. Somebody did. I think it was you, about that some of the regional sports networks, the ones under the banner now, I believe, of it used to be Bally's, and now it's FanDuel. That they're going to be bundling in potentially with ESPN on their new deal there. So that's going to be something very interesting to see, and how that ties into the streaming aspect of it as well.
Right, and we're also going to see some of these smaller tier places. I know Roku has definitely been sniffing around more because they have their MLB package, but that would not shock me as well if they try to expand out their coverage and maybe gain something from that as well.
Yeah.
And again, too, we also tend to forget too, is that for some of these smaller things, like sort of like HBCU, Division II college sport, Division I AA college football, there are opportunities for these entities to make money off of it, because if you can feature content that has an appeal, it's going to be visually want to be shown somewhere. So it's going to be very interesting to see if some of these smaller players decide to snap up some of these rights at some point, just so that they can make some additional capital.
Well, yeah, and that's a really interesting one you mentioned there with the HBCU angle, because that's one that I would think of, just, you know, surface thought, that it would be a significant niche, because it's something of, you know, a lot of cultural pride and everything like that, the way that the schools, the bands operate. My hometown of Cleveland has featured a number of games down at the stadium, and I think the Hall of Fame complex down in Canton has done the same. And those seem to get pretty good tourism. So that's the kind of thing where just my surface read of it is that, cause, you know, if we're going to be looking at something that's a niche, that's a relatively substantial one, I would think.
And I think, too, like, they have their own sort of mini deal right now with ABC. Affiliates, but it would not surprise me, like, because we have to consider this too, Rick, and I know Amazon's been sort of the leader on this, is a lot of these smaller tier packages or niche sports can draw viewership.
Yes.
And if I'm a streamer and I want to do something cost effective, picking up the rights to something like very similar to like what ESPN did with the golf league, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a niche audience and you can make money off of it at a lower cost to you, very similar also to what Max did with Max is doing with Unrivaled. That's the same thing, essentially, at the end of the
right.
day. You're, if there is niche content that you can make that is going to be interesting to watch
mm-hmm.
for viewers or subscribers to keep them in your queue or keep them subscribed to your platform, it's the time to do it. And I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities for a lot of these streamers to pick up packages that right now technically wouldn't make sense for them. But in their growth to keep people on their platforms, that's going to be part of the sort of strategy moving forward.
Yes, and to an extent, and this predates the more recent Max participation in it, but to the larger Turner, I'll say, because it even predates Warner Media. But the whole thing of them having AEW, that fits in the same way. That's a substantial, I mean, pro wrestling is a niche, but it is a substantial one. And the funny thing is that, like, the biggest thing in pro wrestling, the WWE, they don't even brand themselves as pro wrestling. They brand themselves as sports entertainment. So AEW is doing the thing of we're the Pepsi to their Coke, but they embrace the label of it, and they've got both new school and old school pro wrestling to it. So it's a thing where if you're not as much into the Hollywoodish polished sort of deal of sports entertainment and you just love pro wrestling, they've set themselves up to be the biggest thing in that. And we haven't had this in this country on a large level since WCW went out of business in 2001, ironically also on the Turner networks there. Anything that you had with TNA in the 2000s on Spike TV and that kind of stuff, it never really rippled out there. There was never a strong number two until AEW came along in the fall of 2019. So that's the thing, is that identifying those strong niches, that's one of the ways that any of these entities can make a splash for themselves, even if they don't have any of the big boys like the NFL, college football, or the NBA.
And there's also, we all know too, there's more sports leagues coming up too. There's the rumor that the NBA and LeBron James and Maverick Carter are putting together a league overseas in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So there are going to be entities and platforms out there. And the big thing too is it's always going, I feel like the question used to be is I subscribe to the streaming service for the shows. But now it feels like what's happening is I'm subscribing to the streaming service because they could have these things at some point.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's going to be very interesting to see how these entities are going to balance being efficient with their money, but also keeping viewership up.
Yes. Yes. That's the constant battle on this, the constant balance. And that kind of, you know, takes us all the way full circle on this with David Zaslav, that he would consider himself to be somebody that is a master of the balance. He's got the scales and it's all coming out in the right place, profitability and giving a good enough product out there. And again, I come back to where we started with this. I join you in disagreeing with that very strongly, because that's a thing where, was it going to be an overpay for the NBA? Of course it was going to be. But it's one of these deals where, again, it's easy to talk a big game now that, like, the linear cable networks are like, oh, well, it's not affecting us with carriage now. Yeah, well, wait till the next time you're up and you don't have the NBA out there. You know, good luck telling them, we have Big 12 football. Will that make you want to pay our fees? You know, so all of these things that they have, they think collectively can make up for it. And the funny thing is that, like, there's that analogy that we come back to in sports. When you talk about, like, a superstar player being traded, so many of the deals that end up happening are four quarters for a dollar. Well, four quarters for a dollar is what Zaslav / TNT / Max is exemplifying right now. We don't have the NBA anymore, but we have all of these other properties. Well, look, I'll be watching the French Open on there because I never miss any of the majors at the very least. And I watch MLB on there. I watch the NHL. I watch AEW on there. But, I mean, I'm kind of in the minority. Like, there are so many people out there that, like, they're not going to care as long as they don't have the NBA.
Yeah. And, I mean, the big question I do think is going to come up at one point is, where is the fandoms essentially of individuals going to go? And I think the real question right. too is that you're going to see individuals either become more niche sports fans, or essentially what they'll do is that the almighty dollar is going to talk, or the all, or whatever amount of money is going to talk.
Yep.
And you're going to see, it's going to be very interesting to see, because Max has shown significant growth over the last year and a half. And mm-hmm. I'm wondering if we're in a post sort of NBA world for them, if their subscriber count does go down at some point. Just because I have to believe that at least 1% of their viewership is because the NBA is on the platform.
Yeah, I mean, you have to think so. You have to think that that is going to be the case, and that whoever they think that they're going to bring in to make up for that, I don't think it's really going to happen. Again, that's where it gets to what's going to be the strength of, say, their scripted programming and anything else like that, on what they're able to bring in. And that puts really kind of an onus on the HBO side of things. But again, you know, another show that you and I are enjoying the heck out of right now, The White Lotus. I mean, that's a strong show right there. But that's not one that, you know, if you look at, much like Succession a couple of years ago, I mean, Succession really punched above its weight in terms of critical acclaim and everything like that. But you were looking at a couple of million, you know, watchers per episode, viewers, as opposed to, say, like the Game of Thrones stuff. That was a legitimate monster out there in terms of the ratings, or anything with how am I forgetting that apocalyptic show, the zombie show?
Oh, the Last of Us. Yeah.
Not that one. The more famous.
Oh, Walking Dead.
The Walking Dead, yeah. How did I forget that? Yeah, but like The Walking Dead, that was like a monster. So it's like, even the ones like Succession and White Lotus, where you look at it like these are successes, it's not on the scale of what the successes used to be for them. The Sopranos back in the day, you can still have that sort of cultural acclaim, and to where you're able to find these, you know, great reviews every week on The Ringer and some other places, but it's not like, you know, it's 10 million or 15 million people watching every week. And at the end of the day, it's those asses in the seats, as it were, that puts the money in their pockets.
Right. And I think ultimately it goes back to my question with Netflix, is as they start to lose some of their tentpole shows, what is going to be replacing them?
Yeah. Good question. Good question, because yeah, and that's where, again, but like, that's where big time sports is the cheat code. Although yeah. I don't even, maybe cheat code's not the right term, because nothing comes for free. You got to be willing to shell out to get it. But if you're not willing to shell out to get it, and you have to depend on the caliber of your shows, and not even the caliber of your shows per se, because I mean, like The White Lotus deserves to have a lot more viewers. Succession deserved to have a lot more viewers. But it didn't. Industry really kind of, you know, blew out season 3. But that wasn't a thing where, oh my God, 15 million people watched the latest Industry. No, that didn't happen either. So, yeah, it becomes dependent on having the properties that are going to reel in the eyeballs. And that's where, again, you know, what they're trying to do with Unrivaled, that's something where they're trying to kind of, you know, water and grow a plant here, as it were, because women's basketball has been taking off. But, oh, by the way, so much of that has been tied to Caitlin Clark, who's not playing, you know, in the Unrivaled League. So unless you can create something or capitalize on something that's really on the come up, then, again, you're just playing the same niche game as everybody else.
Right, and I think the big question for a lot of these entities, and I think it's the question that Max and Zaslav had to figure out too, is like, is it worth overpaying for a sports deal at some point? And we're going to start to see moving forward, there's going to be a lot of overpaying to keep entities exclusive to one's platform. And we're going to also see some of these nicher markets getting their own brand deals, sort of partnerships, just so that they can fill out the timing as well.
Sure. And so Unrivaled. Yeah. I mean, Unrivaled was one that was, no pun intended, kind of like a layup there, because the economics of women's basketball, and it's kind of hilarious to me to see that Angel Reese and a couple others are talking about possibly going on strike at the end of the present CBA, because their salaries aren't higher. Well, their salaries aren't higher because they're not bringing in the amount of money to justify that. But it is a thing where the economics of women's basketball, for anybody that wondered why Brittany Griner was spending, you know, half her year slipping around in Russia playing in the first place, this has been the deal since time immemorial with women's basketball. When your main season is done in America, you go play somewhere else, and you get paid the money to basically be able to live the lifestyle that you want to be able to afford. That's what it's always been. So Unrivaled, in theory, becomes something where you can keep these players domestically here. They can play this in the winter. It becomes a win-win. They don't have to schlep to the four corners of the world to go, you know, shoot hoops in some of these other countries where weird things or bad things may happen to them. And you get a new property for American TV. So that was kind of a unique kind of a take on this here. And, you know, time will tell the success on that. But I mean, in terms of the ceiling that it has, you know, all of the things bundled together are not going to make up for the NBA, David Zaslav. They're not even going to come close. And many of these are properties that I really like. I don't watch Unrivaled, but like I said before, MLB, NHL, AEW, French Open, shoot that into my veins. But, you know, there's a lot more people out there who only want to watch NBA and don't care about these things.
Right, and I think this is also the question, too, for some of these other entities, too. Like, we're going to talk about the Amazon Thursday night deal. Will someone overbid for that?
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to also see a lot of some of these rights coming up. Like, who's going to bid on the MLB package if ESPN doesn't come back to the negotiating table? It's going to be very interesting to see how, especially with these CBAs all kind of ending in the next couple of years, how the TV rights are going to, the TV and streaming rights, how they're going to play out.
Yeah. And the other thing too, and you know, you mentioned now the TV rights for baseball. So this is theoretically the last year for MLB on ESPN. Again, we'll see how that goes. There's a big school of thought here that, you know, this game of chicken that they're playing at a certain point in time is going to end and they'll reach some kind of accommodation in the middle. But it then becomes, if you're MLB, are you looking at what happened with MLS with where, again, they took the huge money from Apple TV Plus and, again, have been more marginalized out of the mainstream since then? MLB's already become in a silo in the last 15 to 20 years. I have said repeatedly on this show, sadly, every time when I say it, that MLB is in a silo. It's only going to become a bigger silo if it becomes a deal of like, oh, hey, we took an exclusive, all the ESPN rights went to, you know, Apple TV Plus or whatever the case may be, but exclusively to some streamer. Or even if it's ESPN Plus, it's the same thing. You're still paywalling the game. And I know, I mean, cable is paywalled too, to a certain extent, but what's the number of homes that cable is in versus the streamers? So if it all becomes exclusive to ESPN Plus or Peacock or whatever, then in a very relative sense, you are paywalling that. And that's something that they have to be cognizant of also. By the way, and we've talked about this with any number of sports over the years, the whole ESPN La Cosa Nostra type mentality of, gee, it sure would be a shame if anything happened to your sport. Like, they stop covering it when they don't carry it. I remember like when they stopped carrying the NHL. And they started trying to brainwash people into thinking arena football was a bigger deal than the NHL. Like, they're not subtle about the way they bury sports when they don't carry them.
ESPN, I mean, that was also part of the alleged concern over the MLB rights deal, because baseball is notable on ESPN, but it's still very, very, I don't want to say second tier, but I don't think it's highly prioritized when it's NBA and NFL season.
No, it's not. And that's one of the things, too, that, again, on all of their stupid clickbait debate shows, baseball hardly ever registers. It's not like you're going to get screaming A to be able to get in there and talk in depth on baseball for any period of time. And they're unhappy with that. They're unhappy that they're not covered well enough as it is. But it's one of those things where, again, you ain't seen nothing yet. Wait till ESPN has no financial ties to you whatsoever. I mean, I don't know if ESPN Radio is tied to this. That might be separate. They may continue to carry the games on radio, but that's very marginal to the big picture here. If ESPN television programming doesn't carry MLB, then yeah, it's you know, it sure would be a shame if anything happened to your sport. The protection racket's going to kick in, and they're going to get buried. And like 58 minutes past the hour, it's going to be now time for our 15 seconds of highlights from MLB games last night. So, I mean, they don't want to pay the ransom as it was, but Gary Bettman didn't want to pay the ransom until he came crawling back 15 years later. So it seems like everybody does in the long run, Ben.
Right. And that's why I think we're foreseeing some sort of partnership agreement work itself out. But again,
yeah,
if MLB wants to take the risk, they have a partner in Max that could, in Turner, that could definitely take more games.
Yep.
And also we'll see too. I mean, again, Amazon has money, Apple TV has money. And yep. Roku has money. So yep. if they wanted to bifurcate it even more and find a way to make a lot of regular season baseball matter a bit more
yeah.
to fans, that could be a way that they fix this problem with ESPN. But again, we live in a world where ESPN is still ESPN. That's not going to change anytime.
They are. They are. And they're about to spin off and become their own entity, as we've covered previously, on streaming. That is coming later this year with moving off of the cable exclusivity. But in terms of basically the state of the streaming business and some of the bigger entities that we've seen right now, any thoughts that you have, Ben, that we didn't get to yet?
I don't think so. I think the one thing that I am really intrigued with is just some of these entities using their tentpole shows as kind of like the end move. Because we saw a lot during the commercialization era of like the last 2 to 3 years of Max, Hulu, Disney Plus pushing big advertising on stuff that doesn't even usually make sense for them to advertise on their own competitors' platforms.
Right.
So it's going to be really interesting to see how people are individually going to make their decisions with, you know, how the economy is right now in America. And also, too, one big thing I think is going to be very interesting to know is when we hit oversaturation in anything, whether it's food or music or entertainment, there starts to be a minor decline on how the individual thinks of their entertainment.
Right.
And I do wonder, at some point, when does it become too much for a user? When yeah. does it become too much? What it gets to the point where I think the average, I think I read the statistic, the average user is subscribed up to 3 to 4
mm-hmm.
services. And that's like the average person.
Yeah. Yeah.
So my question then becomes is once you get to the level where you're paying past cable prices, how many people are going to just start to cut to save money at some period of time? I think that's going to be the biggest question, I think, for streamers coming up in this calendar year.
Well, in particular, and we keep hearing all this talk that the red lights are flashing on the economy right now. So, yeah, I mean, if that happens, you know, everything that we're talking about here has been all things being equal. But, yes, if we get any kind of a downturn where people's pocketbooks are hurting, then you're really going to see some panic in the streaming business here, because at least in the short to medium term, there's going to be some real pullback on the consumer spending.
Every streaming service has had an easy ability to move their price range up.
Yep.
And then the question is that if the economy continues to down, it's a downturn.
Yeah.
Significant margins. How are you're going to see a lot of subscription and fatigue, and you're going to see a lot of stuff. A lot of these entities start to lose subscriber numbers. And again, we saw Netflix already start to pivot away from releasing subscriber numbers. So it would not surprise me that we're going to see that moved away from in totality.
Well, and this is just a guess on my part, but my guess is that the price increases that you've seen in recent years is that they're trying to get out in front of what they think is the downturn that's coming. That whatever you think of the specific things on the ground right now as far as conditions go, generally speaking, every several years or so, you're due for a downturn. We haven't really had a downturn since the artificial one that was induced by COVID. So my guess is, here's a clip and save prediction, is that they built in enough in there that you may start to see some of them trim back a little bit. If we get into an actual recession, I think they've built in room to where they feel internally like they can trim back a bit to try to stem the subscriber base from going too much lower.
Right. And I think one of the major questions that's going to be discussed is bundling and deals are going to be some of the biggest discussion points.
Yep.
And we saw with the one of the final points that I also wanted to note too is like we saw that Hulu Disney Plus Max bundle add over 1.5 million subscribers
right.
to those services.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to see some interesting bedfellows coming up at some point moving forward, Rick, because I think the biggest entity the biggest situation for new subscribers to be gained by a lot of these services will be because of the economic times.
Yes, I think so.
And it's going to be really interesting to see what bundles come out for. And again, we have a new entity in Fox running into the game as well. So
right.
it's going to be even more interesting to see what ends up happening, because we're going to have another new streamer who's going to have their own unique style of content and spin.
Yep. And basically, this has been a large theme of the show today, is that sports are one of the stickiest things in terms of if you're looking at, well, I have to cut back a service. Is it going to be this one or this one or this one? You're more liable to do it if it's like, oh, well, I generally love the TV shows on Max, as opposed to such and such has sports packages that I can't live without. And that's what it'll end up being. And that's where basically, again, Max and Warner Media has left itself on the outside looking in for people to feel that way about the NBA. They could be quicker to get chopped, as it were, for any subscribers once they lose the NBA because of that, particularly if there are tough times economically. So, yes, so there are some streamers that because of the decisions they've made are going to be a little bit more vulnerable in this climate. But, of course, we will continue monitoring that, as always, on this show. I always enjoy dipping back into this little ongoing mini-series that we've had going on, Ben, and it's fun just to kind of look back on some of the things we've talked about and just kind of trace this out in real time, because it is, as I said before, one of the defining entertainment stories of the 21st century. I'm very proud that we've been on top of this the whole way, and couldn't do it without you specifically, my friend. Thank you for being here again today to talk about this.
I appreciate it, Rick.
Thanks, Ben, and thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1816.